Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to Spin the Rally Pod, Dirtfish's weekly rallying podcast. And what a podcast we have for you today. Joining me, Luke Barry, in the absence of Lisa O'Sullivan hosting the show, is George Donaldson. George, how are you?
Good morning, Luke. Absolutely. On a natural high after a fabulous safari rally. We managed to achieve everything we wanted to out here. The rally gave us such an incredible result. Once again, safari has delivered us everything and more for the rally fan, I think, really. And the drivers all, you know, have variously confessed from it being horribly tough to fantastically tough, but it is tough, that's for sure. Yeah.
Now, George, of course, for those that weren't maybe aware, was our man on the ground this weekend in Kenya. And actually, you're still in Kenya at the minute, aren't you, George?
I am. I'm now working freight, so I'm helping. I'm helping an old friend with. I'm working with him to get all the freight. So I'm looking at all my rally cars and air freight boxes, all loaded on a series of auto mover trucks, which are the best trucks we can get here, and they are ready to convoy their way down to Nairobi, straight to the airport. And five of those cars and one of those big AMP air freight boxes will be flying tomorrow morning back to UK. There'll be an M Sport on Wednesday morning, I would have thought.
Well, there we go. And there's a little insight to you as to how these things work. And to be fair, for those that aren't aware, there was a video that went up on Dirtfish's YouTube channel earlier, it's Monday now, isn't it? Earlier last week, Monday when you record, Tuesday when you listen, if you're listening on the day, it comes out. But of course, Safari Rally Kenya, the sixth round of this year's World Rally Championship. George, we have to come to you to start this off because you, as you say, you've been there. I had the comfort of watching this from a little flat in Edinburgh, so things more civilised, I guess, for me. But you were out there in the action for the second year in a row for you, actually. You've been at both the two recent Safari rallies. So first of all, how great was it to be back, and how did this compare to last year's event?
Well, always fabulous to come to Kenya. I used to spend 6 months of the year here, which many of our regular podcast listeners will know. Very similar event to last year, very similar sort of format. Some of the changes, stages had changed around. Some stages were lengthened, some were just altered slightly. Most of the changes were fabulous. One of the changes, all the drivers last year, Luke, they said, oh, let's make this rally tougher. So the rally made it tougher, but unfortunately, their idea of tougher and the driver's idea of tougher was obviously slightly different. The organisers thought, oh, we'll put in an extra 15 or 20 kilometres of fesh-fesh sections, soft, sandy. If it was sand, it would be luxury. It's not sand. It's talcum powder, cement dust type dust. And it played havoc with Hyundai's intake system, particularly there. And they were just a bit unlucky, I think, with the design. Just really, I think that really was just the luck of the draw. But the rally, similar to last year, I love being here. I love spending time here and I love chasing Safari Rally around. And I just had an absolute ball, really an absolute ball.
Before we dissect any of the sporting elements, you mentioned a couple of them there. But if you can just give everybody that hasn't been lucky enough to have gone to Kenya at all or the Safari Rally, what it's like to actually be there, because it really isn't like anything else on rallying's global tour, is it?
No, it's Africa's a special place in many people's hearts, and many people would be worried and concerned about coming to Africa, but I would say you don't have to. I mean, coming to Kenya is a lovely country filled with friendly people. And the rally runs basically off the edge of an escarpment down into the great, well, one of the little prongs off the Great African Rift Valley, and it is phenomenally spectacular. It is so picturesque. On top of that, as you're driving down the road, I mean, you drive out of Nairobi up towards the escarpment to come over the escarpment and down into Naivasha. You're coming northwest out of Nairobi. And you're driving down the road, and for many people, you know, they'll be picked up at the airport, driving out the road. There's now a new highway into town. You come off that highway, go on to the southern bypass. That brings you around the city. You'll see the city. On your left is the national park, and it just looks like grassland and trees. And you think, oh, yeah, national park, what does that mean? And you come off the southern bypass, and you start driving north on a dual carriageway for about 20 kilometres. And then it goes on to just a two-lane highway. And all of a sudden, there are zebra at the side of the road. And to see people's reaction, fantastic to see it. It's absolutely gobsmacking. And a short while later, you may see giraffe, ostrich. And not so much on that road up there, the escarpment, but it's just phenomenal. Ostrich, zebra specifically, giraffe at the side of the road. Not even a national park. It is an incredible country. So that impression that you would consider exotic and would be in some form of very, very special place or out in the wild. They're not. They're living alongside humans. And they seem to coexist quite comfortably to a great extent. So absolutely amazing. So that's the experience of coming to Africa for Africa's sake, for Kenya. And then the rally itself, well, in reality, it is just special stages. But they're special stages unlike any other. It's not a flat-out blast. It is about preserving the car. But I really feel that rather than doing this podcast, what we should probably do is just link together all the shows we've done. I think we've done 6 shows across the course of the rally. And that would be the podcast. Just go to YouTube and just look at those end-to-end from start to finish. I think we've given a great flavour of the event here. Look, it's just, I mean, I'm obviously just in love. I'm besotted with the country. I'm besotted with the people. I'm besotted with the rally. I won't hear ill of this event. Although, okay, they could lose some of the fesh-fesh. I honestly don't see the point of it.
Well, I tell you what, I wasn't going to go there this early, but you mentioned it there because there were a few comments throughout the weekend. I think I remember Malcolm Wilson was the first person I heard anyway bring it up. I imagine you heard plenty from the drivers themselves as well about the topic. And we did see that the first stage of Sunday's loop was shortened because of the fesh-fesh at the start that essentially wreaked havoc. But would you say that's... Because there have been some complaints across social media, which I'll be honest, I've personally been a little bit surprised by, to see that folk weren't happy with the challenge, because you tend to see people want rallying's old school nature back, and this to me is exactly what we got here. But you reckon the fesh-fesh is maybe the one thing that you just don't need for these Rally One cars when they're not in safari spec?
Well, I mean, the World Rally cars will get through it. It's the people in the R5 cars and in Group N cars, and if there was any two-wheel drive cars, they will not go over fesh-fesh. So it's very limiting. I mean, I get people's comments. So people were actually saying it's terrible, it's far too tough.
I think there were some concerns about the toughness and concerns about cost for teams of damaged parts and everything else. And I'll be honest, I've not looked too deeply into it. So I don't want to misrepresent anybody's opinion.
Let's talk through that. I mean, in fairness to those comments, I agree that there is no point in creating a rally that is just becomes a matter of attrition. That is a pointless affair. And that was the risk with the fesh-fesh, because fesh-fesh debilitates very quickly and it becomes deeper and deeper. And you could effectively just about stop the rally in it. So it's a risky strategy from the point of view of continuity of the event. I don't see the point of killing the cars. There was plenty challenges on this rally. There was plenty of drama, plenty of speed sections and plenty of sections where you have to preserve the car. There was all that without needing the fesh-fesh. A couple of short, 50-metre fesh-fesh sections, if you find some little loops where you could do that, and they did exist within the estate roads or the conservancies, or sort of nature conservancies. So, yeah, you could have done that. So I'm sure the organisers will be looking at it. They'll take on the comments, the critique, and they will make a stronger, better event next year. Maintaining the challenge, I mean, I've got some great ideas. I'm looking at the overview map right now, and what you could do with this is just amazing. There's a lot more, and they are aware of it. And you know, obviously, there's limitations I don't understand about. But I think we'll see an even better event next year. And for those people saying, that's pointless, what's the point of destroying a rally car? I can absolutely agree with your sentiment and totally understand it. The teams are not making special cars, so we should not expect them to do the impossible. It's pointless. There's no winners in that scenario. So, yeah, I think we'll see those attenuated next year, and we'll see the event moving on to creating more of the very pertinent challenges that keep the sport within the flavour, but still giving it that safari test. I'm sure we'll get that without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm sure we will as well. But speaking of pertinent challenges, I think that's probably a good way to describe the situation for every single one of Cali Rovanperä's rivals at the minute. Because on a rally like this, maybe they were hoping that this is the kind of one event that might catch the youngster out. But he's done it again, George. It's 4 wins out of 5. I think he's 145 championship points down from a possible 180. So he's absolutely flying at the minute. We know that. We're kind of running out of words to describe him, aren't we? How can we sum up Rovanperä's performance here?
Well, it's quite interesting. Talking to him at various points throughout the rally and the start, he was sure he was in a bad position being first on the road. And I have to say, I didn't get the opportunity to put his dissolution right. When you go for Fesh, first car has a massive advantage. It just gets worse and worse. And there was enough of that to affect the other cars detrimentally to just put them that 15, 20 seconds behind as Elfin ended up. And you had to try and catch that. And to catch that, you have to go a little bit faster. And then you get a puncture and you lose 15 or 20 seconds. Again, if you're lucky enough to get to the end of stage, you lose 2 minutes if you're not. So being first on the road was no disadvantage there. There was another stage, one of the new stages, geothermal. When you looked at it, we did a preview on that stage. It was a beautifully cambered road, really fantastic. Looked like it was going to clean. And all the drivers, obviously, including Cali, thought it was going to clean. But when I reviewed it with Colin, I said, this will not clean. It looks like it's just marbles on the top and it'll clean. It's just more of the same underneath. It may get softer, but it will not clean. And Cali came through it. His comments at the stop line were, oh, I'm going to lose a lot of time. It was cleaning like hell. But he got fastest time on that stage by a considerable margin. It just got softer and softer and softer. So, he as you say, you know, what are his rivals going to do? Well, actually, he started Safari Rally with a probable advantage. Not a lot. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, 30 seconds or a minute, Luke, nothing like that. It was just, if he didn't put a foot wrong, he was liable to just get a tiny little step up that just made it a little bit tougher for the guys behind them. If they'd been really on point, it might have just been 1 or 2 seconds and they could have mounted a challenge later. But nobody managed that. Everyone was playing the waiting game and seeing what was going to happen. I think maybe people thought that Cali was going too quick, but actually he just actually had the best conditions. You know, on the second day, he didn't have that. You know, he was effectively running last car. So, but luckily there was really very little soft sections, so he didn't pay a penalty back. I tell you what, you make your own luck. So he put himself at the front of the championship, came to Kenya, he got the best of conditions. You know, he's going to go to Estonia, he's going to be first car on the road on the first day. That's going to be a massive disadvantage. I mean, there's almost no way that he can win Estonia from the situation he's in.
We cannot say that about Rovanperä.
Well, of course we can. But you know, the odds are massively stacked against him there. And whatever, I mean, if that guy can pull himself into the top three, the guy's a god. If he can get the lead, his rivals have either been completely daft out of it, or honestly, hand in their driving gloves. You know, that's it. It's time because the guy is just magical. But you know, he is clearly now. You know, he's come to the detractors, the doubters, whatever. He's come to Safari Rally, and he understood what he had to do. He did it. He made no mistakes. He knew he couldn't make a mistake. He didn't make an error. He did make an error on the first stage. We all saw that on video. He nearly rolled the car. So he's not perfect, but that performance is worthy of Sebastian Ogier or Sebastian Loeb at their very best, at their peak. That's what we saw this weekend. We saw Cali Rovanperä deliver a performance that matches or possibly exceeds Sebastian Ogier and Sebastian Loeb at their best. That remains to be seen. Time will tell. But, I mean, there's no doubt about what Cali Rovanperä is right now. He's a rally god, and it's as simple as that. I will worship at his altar accordingly. The guys are gone.
Well, I think this is the key thing, isn't it? Because I know there are potentially a few fans out there that are growing I don't want to say frustrated, but they're kind of keen to see somebody else win. But for me, I think it's fantastic to see somebody just so at one with themselves, the car, the culture, everything is just working. He's in that really sort of envious sweet spot where he can kind of do anything and it comes off for him. It is worth pointing out, I think, that on Safari, Elvin Evans, he wasn't actually that far off. There were a couple things that kind of went against him. We know he had a puncture or two. He had wipers feeling him in the rain, but he was quite cautious in some of the stages on Friday, particularly, wasn't he, George? And with hindsight, that potentially is maybe a little bit too cautious for him, do you think?
Well, you say that, but, you know, maybe in the road position, remember he was running a little bit further back, so there was a lot more rocks out on the road. I would actually say that he probably delivered the best result he could have done from his start position. And that's taking a punt on it. I'm not saying that as a fact, but that's taking a punt on it. But he didn't have the greatest of conditions. He would have had a much rockier road than Kyle would have had. These World Rally cars lifted out a lot of rocks, and the road got significantly rougher. So I'd say, you know, if you were doing a call and driver score, I'm going to go down the list, and I'm pretty well going to give four drivers are going to get a 10. You know, that's simple as that. They did everything right. You know, I mean, Elfin very, very candidly went through his list of things that didn't quite work for him this rally. And you know what? Every single one of them is not on him, categorically. Yeah. He can say, could I have done better there? Could I have done better? Actually, Elfin, I think you actually did. You know, you didn't have a pig's ear, but whatever came out of this, it was a silk glove. You delivered a silk glove, you know. It was a tough one. Your hand wasn't the same. And that's just the nature of rally. And it's fabulous because you've got to be able to leverage it. And that's part of the sport. And they all did. They all did a wonderful job, really. It was great. But Cali, my goodness me. Yep. You've got to be glad you're not an up-and-coming factory rally driver at the moment, because that's what you've got to overcome to get yourself a drive.
It's a very good point. Because he is redefining the barriers, isn't he? You looked at that and said a 21-year-old driver not got hope in hell of doing what he's doing. But he's a different species, I think, is maybe the nicest, the best way to put it. But we have to touch on Toyota's historic result as well. And George, you're a man that will know how much this means to Toyota more than most, because obviously you had quite a few years there in various capacities with the team back in the 80s and 90s. So a 1-2-3-4 finish. It's now quite a well-trodden stat that it's the first one Toyota's had since the 93 Safari. But it was, I think what impressed me most about this was the car didn't seem to miss a beat at all. And when you compare it to what happened with Hyundai and M Sport, it's quite clear what an advantage they seem to have at the minute.
Yeah, I hasten to add, actually, our cars in 1993 were exactly the same. They were absolutely perfect in every way. after 3,500 kilometres of stages, yeah. So I'm sure they were well secondhand, but we got to the end of that event quite strongly as well. Sorry, go and ask the question again. I got distracted by my nonsense look.
No, that's not nonsense. It's great history. Yeah, it's great history. Yeah. I was just making the point that I think the fact that obviously all four cars and the drivers did a great job, but the car seemed to have obviously there were tiny little niggles at points, but no real major issues. And when you see how many issues the other two teams had, I think it's quite worrying for the rest, I think.
It is. They did have a couple of little issues, which were alluded to a couple of times. So Sébastien Ogier nearly fell foul, and they nearly retired on the last day in the Fesh-Fesh. So his clutch, he was obviously using the clutch. When he's coming through the Fesh-Fesh, he must have had to use the clutch at some point. So the rule in Fesh-Fesh is you never use your clutch, because you push the clutch down, the air intakes and the breathers for the bell housing, dust goes in there, the cement dust. You push the clutch down, the springs open up, the dust goes behind it, and the springs don't close again. And that's kind of what happened. And his clutch was spinning. But fortunately, because it's so dry, he obviously cycled it a few times. He managed to get it moving, and the clutch bit again and actually cleaned itself out and got drive. And you get the same thing on a wet Safari. On a wet Safari, you'll get mud going in, but the mud doesn't clear. You get if you've not sealed up your clutch bell housing properly, you get mud in it. It goes behind the springs of the clutch and it jams open, so you've got no drive. So they had that. That was potentially quite a big issue, and I guess nobody briefed it. I don't give briefings like that unless someone's paying me. You know, you don't get that for free. Well, obviously, Dirtfish Dirtfish listeners get it for free, but it's actually a pretty obvious one to most people. The So they had that little glitch. And I think they, you know, I saw that they'd done a lot of preparation in between each stage. Seb Ogier and the other drivers were pulling all the air intake system off and going out around various cooling systems on the car with a little homemade vacuum cleaner with a flexible hose on either end, flexible hose away outside the car at one end, and using it like a vacuum cleaner, vacuuming out all the dust. And it was significant quantities of dust coming out. So they were all doing a huge amount of work in between the stages. The level of diligence applied was massive. And I think that's probably where Toyota got a bit of a bite on it. I think they were on the front foot on all that type of thing. Led, I have to say, and then levels of diligence led categorically by Seb Ogier. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So they had that. I think they had, well, obviously, Elfyn Evan had his wipers fail, but that may have been damaged from the quantities of dust and then using the wiper. And the dust, although it's dry, is quite heavy, and it may have damaged the wipers that way. I'm not quite sure of the detail of that. So, yeah, but compared to everyone else, they certainly had a fraction of the problems. I mean, Hyundai obviously had a major air intake system. They had wipers fail as well. I can't remember what other little issues they had.
We'll get to that. Just a quick one on Toyota and the history of it, because I think of all rallies, and you can correct me with this, George, but I think of all rallies, this has always been, it's felt, at least to me, like a Toyota rally. Like, it's always just been a one that the teams always seem to just win. Essentially, there's massive history in the Safari for the team. So of all places for them to get 1, 2, 3, 4, how much do you think that's going to mean to everybody back in Japan?
Well, I believe for many, many, many Toyota fans and many Toyota employees, you know, certainly the older ones, it will be massive, absolutely massive. I really, really hope that Toyota, and I believe they do, they will massively value this win and leverage it greatly. I mean, I would imagine that they'll want to take, I mean, if I was Mr. Toyota, I'd want all four rally cars. Don't touch them. Send them to Japan. They're going in the museum, all four of them. Clean sweep like that, and nothing like that's happened through the World Rally Car era. Get them in Japan, and have all the drivers over, big presentations. I would leverage the hell out of it. Let's face it, Toyota are doing this, as all the other manufacturers are, to create a brand image and a brand identity. And rally being the tough sport it is all about saying this is how reliable and tough our cars are. My goodness me, you would want to just dip into the coffers, pull out a bit of extra advertising budget and get onto it. This is huge. So, I mean, in the past, it would have been huge for Japan. I don't work with the Toyota folks anymore, sadly, but I'm sure they will be absolutely leveraging it very, very strongly.
So before we move away from the championship leaders, I just wanted to touch a little bit on Seb Ogier. You mentioned the clutch problem he has, and you mentioned his sort of leadership skills, I guess, away from the stages, but on them, he can't really buy a break at the moment, can he? It's the third rally in a row where I guess you could argue he's had a problem out with his control. Portugal's was the messiest of his three events so far, but here he was leading the rally before he got his puncture, and that kind of just put him completely on the back foot from there on, didn't it?
Yeah, and again, I suspect he got that puncture because, you know, he was, 10th on the road or something. So he was getting those conditions. But Seb was very philosophical about it. Obviously less than happy about it, but he was philosophical about it. And he said, we say in France that bad things come. I think the saying in French is, if two bad things happen, a third will certainly happen. In English, we say bad things always come in threes. So same thing. His next event, I suspect he'll be giving Mr. Rovanperä a little bit of a run for his money, whatever that happens to be. I don't know which event he's doing yet, but I'm sure we'll see him lift the game. His bad luck has to be gone now.
Yeah, you'd think when you, and as I say, we don't know when he'll be back yet, but we will all find out soon, and we'll be chasing that news. So dirtfish.com is the place to find it whenever that comes. But we promised we'd come to Hyundai, and we're now going to touch on it. I guess the tone will change a little bit here, because I don't think I've seen Julien Moncé as deflated as he was after this one. It was a brutal rally for Hyundai.
That's not even the word for it, is it? It was worse than that. I suspect to some extent they're a victim of circumstance. I think they were probably, you know, all the air intake systems are unique to each team. Theirs seems to be, I mean, that's the worst thing I've seen since Subaru since ProDrive redesigned the Subaru front and they got all the dust sucked up from the front of the car over the windscreen pretty well every gravel event. This seemed to emulate that level of disaster for the drivers. And not only did it kill their vision, it also killed the air filter. I mean, you know, they were, I mean, we had rally cars stopping in the stages, changing air filters. That's how bad it was. My goodness me, I mean, what's that about? That's incredible. So, yeah, I mean, the least said about it, the better. One thing after another, they had broken suspension parts. Well, in fairness, that's, again, maybe a factor based on the fact they couldn't see where they were going at times. When they're going through the fesh, you've got to keep it going. And, you know, you've got to, as you come into it, we did actually touch on this in the YouTube videos we did before the event. That basically, as you're coming into the fesh, you need to look where you're going to go. Hopefully you can see the end of it and hit it and just keep going. And you're going to try and stay ahead of the dust. The normal car, with a Land Cruiser, you try and go fast enough to stay ahead of it. With those rally cars, as soon as they touched it, they were blind. So they then just had to hold the steering straight. If they felt it tugging one way, I guess they had to turn it and guess where they were going. Sometimes that was 100, 150 meters away. And in some cases, you would have 3 or 4 90-degree corners to go around, quite tight, quite slow, first-gear corners. So, I mean, basically, they would have had to stop. They would have had to stop to do that. And now they're digging themselves out of a hole. Everything's just getting worse every time they have to do that. Yeah, so that basically was the author of their demise, really. I think otherwise, they did. I mean, obviously, Ott had managed to overcome all of those difficulties and is, again, a driver. I'm going to have to give him a pretty well a 10 for this rally again, because I think he did a great job. And finally, the car just let him down a little bit. I was so disappointed because Colin had forced me to do a top three and I put Ott as the winner. And which I felt was quite justified, but sadly the car let him down. But he overcame a lot of those fesh difficulties. Just remember that he managed to suss it out and drive around it, and until his prop shaft failed.
Yeah, again, it was prop shaft on Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, you know, just maybe a little bit unlucky. Maybe carried a little bit too much speed over a rough section. I mean, the section that failed in Soysambre, that was the first stage on Saturday morning, wasn't it? That it failed, or was it Saturday afternoon? No, it was Saturday morning. I think he failed.
I'll be honest, yeah, I've got
okay. Whichever stage it was, anyway.
But you're testing memory.
Yeah, okay. But the point being is, it's that stage is a little bit of everything. There's some very rocky sections over lava beds, and there's a couple of stony sections where you could do prop shaft damage, but not a lot of them. And given that Ott's approach to this was steady, I would have suggested that. That the damage must have happened in there, but Ott had been driving so clever, I don't think it would have been driver induced. I think, again, he just might have gotten lucky. There was very fast sections through narrow twisty bits. If he'd come round one of those, you couldn't have traded away 60-70 kph round some of those sections. You would have lost out heavily, so you'd have to carry that speed. But there was nowhere, there would have been nowhere to go. You'd have just had to go over stuff. Now Ott didn't report any of that, and it's just kind of normal stuff for a rally car. There's no way in the world that the prop shaft should get bent. So I don't guess it was bent. It must have failed in some other way. So we're speculating. It's a little bit unfair to the team to do that. Apologies, everyone, at Hyundai. But it's our job to do that. But I don't think Ott certainly was the one that had the strategy here for me to deliver. And I mean, we spoke to Thierry before the start. Thierry reckoned his strategy last year was exactly the right strategy, so he was going to do the same this year. And I did actually quietly comment to Colin after that was said. I said, I think he's going to be one of my customers at stage finishes where I'm going to get a bit of filming. And I wasn't wrong. I wasn't wrong. So
yeah, there was a bit of a joke between the pair, because I listened back to we get all the audios at our end, like the raw cuttings of them. Yeah. And there's a lot of banter between the two of you, but you can see all the stage ends that you had trouble. Yeah. So
basically, like, I genuinely started to hide in the car when he came past, because I thought, well, if he doesn't see me, and then I changed up my mind. I thought, no, when I know he's got out of the stage, I'm going to stand there and let him see me, so he knows that I'm not his bad luck. Because look, he's got through the stage, and I'm here, so it can't be me. You know, that was my thinking.
Well, there we go. I'm actually going to make a slight bit of a gear change and hit reverse, actually, weirdly. But just on the stuff you said about high-end Isaiah filter, because I'll be honest, I'm not a very technically minded person. It's the side of the sport that I'm not particularly knowledgeable about at all. It just doesn't really come naturally to me. And I suspect there's a lot of people that obviously weren't at Safari Rally Kenya to really see the front of the Hyundai. So I don't know how much you can confidently say about it, because you obviously didn't design the car, but having seen it, when you're talking about the position of it and how it's sucking in the dust, how did it differ from the other two cars from what you could pick up?
Colin has asked me not to ever be too specifically looking into the cars and too nosy about them, because, you know, that just to respect the team and not upset them so that we can keep our good access and good relationship with them. But basically, the Toyota appeared to have almost a double air intake underneath the lip of the bonnet, along the front of the bonnet. It was broader, not very high, but very broad. Hyundai had a great big round one in the middle of the bonnet. So they had this sort of single big point, and the Toyota had a broader one. So obviously somehow the Toyota picked up less dust than the Hyundai. But both cars had the air filter on the front. So the air intake on the front. They have a trunk, it would be a carbon or Kevlar trunk that goes back over the top of the engine. The turbos are right down, or the air filters and the turbos are right down at the back of the engine, kind of underneath the driver's, the right behind the driver's footwell, basically. And there's a bit of flexible hose in there to allow it to move a little bit, obviously. And so the dust was coming in there, going down into that air filter box and then into the turbos. And that's what you tried to stop. Well, the air filter was just blocking, obviously. That's what was happening. So I think obviously the way that Hyundai scooped up the dust, they obviously just came straight into that air intake. Whereas with the Toyota, maybe there was two bits did, but there was one part of it that was still available to let air in, and it effectively just took in a little bit less dust. Okay. It just must have been just as simple as that. I mean, there's no way in the world that you could sit down and design that successfully. You could consider it, and I suspect that Toyota have considered it. It may be that Hyundai have not considered it to the same extent. I would say that they would have designed their air filter to be as efficient as possible, to make it the best and give them the most power. And then they take another look at it and say, right, what problems are we going to have on what rallies? Well, would you actually change the air filter design to make it good for Safari? The compromises might be too great. You know, you would then lose power or a little bit of efficiency for all the other rallies in the championship. You can't do that. You've got to live with it as it is. So whether it was intelligent design or whether it was a little element of luck, I'm gonna actually give Tom Fowler this one. I'm going to say it was probably intelligence, smartness. He would probably have said to one of his engineers, this is what we've got. Go away and look at all the video of Safari. Go away and look at some of the history of the events and the problems, air intakes, clutches. It's all available there if you go and look at the history. And then have a look at some of the videos, you know, and say, right, these are the problems that can happen. Okay. And then he'll have pulled his engineering design team back together. And remember, they were under an incredible time constraint. And they'll say, right, got to think about Safari. That fabulous design, that's just going to hoover up dust, you know, so we can't have that, but let's think about the next place we can do it. So, you know, there will have been small compromises, intelligent actions undertaken, and Toyota got it better than Hyundai did. And remember, to Hyundai, we're under a much, much, much more severe time pressure. They wouldn't have had the luxury of being able to, you know, let's just say that Tom Fowler at Toyota did exactly as I just said. There is no way that Christian Lorio at Hyundai had the luxury of that time or that resource. Yeah. There you are. M Sport didn't have a problem with dust in their air filters. You know, they figured it out too. They had time. And their engineers would have done exactly that. I mean, I would be very surprised within the engineering base that they wouldn't have done the homework that I've just suggested. It sounds very scholarly or you know, almost anecdotal type engineering investment, but those are the things that make the difference between winning and losing in motorsport.
Yeah.
Understanding 100%. The history, understanding the issues. So, Tom Fowler and his design team at Toyota, brilliant job. M Sport, actually, I think they did a very, very good job to Hyundai. generally, I think they did pretty good because, let's be honest, Ott Tanak was in the fight for the lead for a good portion of the rally. But ultimately, their shortage of time, the shortage of resource has probably cost them quite dear. You know, so I'm sure you mentioned Julian Monsett was very, very miserable. Honestly, if I was him, you know, having to face up to Korean masters that are maybe very, very demanding, you know, and, I mean, of course they will be. You know, there'll be accountants there saying, what are we doing? Julian should just go back to them and say, guys, this is on you. You know, you robbed us of 3 or 4 months of development time on this car. You want us to do this job and you want to win, and we all do. You need to listen to us. We're telling you there's the date we need to know. You can't go away changing your mind and saying you can't have it. This is what you're getting. Actually, honestly speaking, if that's your attitude, don't bother at all. Actually, there's the bottom line. Either do it right or don't bother at all. Ooh, am I sounding a bit hard this morning there, Luke?
There we go. He's been part of the WRC circus close-handed. He's now got even more knowledgeable than he was before. So George Donaldson is coming through with great analysis. But you did mention it there. We'll move on because we're about, I think, 35 minutes in already. Time is flying. I think we had our first mention of M Sport Ford there just in those last couple of minutes. So what can we make of their event? Because I guess, at least for me, it felt like another... is it harsh to say missed opportunity? Potentially it isn't, because there were three of them in the top five early on Friday, but things kind of unraveled. What did you make of M Sport's performance, both from the car perspective and I guess what the drivers managed to do with the car as well, George?
Well, Colin had pinned Ford as his favourite. He thought that Ford would be the team that would manage the podium lockout, you know, that we sort of speculated might happen. And I think that was a good call. That was a good call from the point of view that, you know, M Sport have done a great job with this car. In terms of weakness, they had a couple of broken suspensions. Seb had a broken steering... it wasn't a steering rod, I think it was a control rod.
Steering arm, I think. It was something like that.
I think it was some sort of control rod. I saw it myself. And Jordan Serdaridis had exactly the same. Both had happened, and obviously, you know, they obviously got big hits. Now, when you're designing a car, you design it to be strong enough to cover any eventuality, and then you put a factor of two on it. But you can't put a factor of four on things. Again, you can't make things to survive for some unexpected hit on Safari Rally, because your car will be slower for the rest of the year. You know, I mean, I looked at the parts that were broken. I was actually quite, I wasn't shocked by how light they appeared to be. I'm obviously, I didn't touch any of them. I'm just looking at the broken ones and the material. It's very fine. It'll be very, very high quality steel, you know, to the very, you know, to make it as light as they possibly can. And quite clearly, it is very, very strong. I mean, absolutely very, very strong. It probably took big hits. I don't know what you do. Do you go away and, you know, use the next steel up, you know, the next grade of steel up? Because you can't make it heavier. If you make it heavier, you won't be competitive. The Ford was competitive here. Seb Loeb was fighting at the front with very, very little experience here. I mean, you know, he did the event once in 2002. Which was a very different event, but he certainly had an idea of what he was going to come up against. Albeit in a slightly more sprint format, and he did a great job. He showed what the car can do, but none of the other drivers really came to the front and did that. To be fair, I thought Craig Breen started off quite well, but again, you know, running well. I mean, he had a pretty good road position. It wasn't that awful a road position. So I suppose it wasn't great. So, you know, again, I mean, he got a puncture, and then he broke something, I think, on the key dog stage.
It all went wrong.
I think he had a puncture and then broke the suspension and stopped. And that was a shame. You know, that was a shame. Congenital weakness? No, I think it was drivers not understanding the limits of what they could do, probably. And again, I'll just refer back to Elfyn Evans, who, as we said at the start, you know, did he not go fast enough right at the beginning? I'll say Elfyn got it absolutely 100% right. He got it very nearly just as right as Callie did. Very nearly. Now they're gonna have to be tied. I know I don't normally get to do that, and I've interloped. I wouldn't have got away with doing that if Colin or David had been here. But because it's you and you're soft on me, I got away with it.
People said I was softening everyone, George. So maybe I need to toughen up a little bit, like Safari Rally.
Don't practice on me.
I won't. Don't worry, a fellow Scottish comrade. We don't hurt one of our own. We don't hurt anyone. Actually, I shouldn't say that.
That's absolutely, for all the listeners, that's absolutely not true. The basic Scottish premise is retaliate first. So Luke's talking, which is a wonderful misnomer that I trade on. I trade on retaliate first. I never actually really do it, but the concept's lovely to me. Yeah, there we go.
Well, there we go. Some ancient Scots history aside. Just on Craig Breen, we did have a bit of a mention there, but in terms of his strategy for the rally, he described it as quite boring, didn't he? The way he was driving around at essentially a snail's pace. Do you think that was overly extreme, or was that just the right way to play it in his situation?
I think in his situation, with what he felt he could do, not really understanding what might break on the car or where it might break, I think given the level of input they got back from their drivers, I think the Ford strategy was spot on. Boring for Craig? Well, honestly speaking, that was his bed. He made it, so he had to lie in it. Do not criticise Safari Rally in front of me. You know, that's a big mistake. And I like Craig a lot. I've had a lot of laughs this weekend. But honestly speaking, don't you criticise my rally. There are millions of fans here in Kenya of Safari Rally. Craig, you know, you're going to come back here. People are going to question you, you know. This will be a hard rally for you next year if you don't change your tune towards this rally. I'll personally make sure of it. Retaliate. It was tough. You know, he did. He obviously super rallied. It takes the wind out of your sails. Seb Loeb had the same, but you know he came back and fought. He came back and fought. So, you know, Craig should. We don't know what strategy was played out in the team, and obviously Craig has a championship to consider as well, and that's an important factor. Let's give him that. But I want to see Craig come back. I want to see Craig go home, think about this one, and you know start making input into the team engineers. We want this. We want that. If we can't have that, how am I going to approach? You won't get everything that you want, but you've got to figure it out. Come back to an event like this and drive past the problems. Elfyn Evans, not such a good position on the road. He took it easy on the Friday to make sure he didn't have too many problems. Turns out very smart. You know, very smart. Craig Breen in a similar position, you know, but he got a puncture and then broke his suspension. That's absolutely not on Craig, and it's just a circumstance, but you can carry the car. And we, again, listen to our previews and we talk about those details in quite considerable format here. I'm turning into some sort of super fan here, aren't I? I mean, I'm a super fan, of course.
The passion is coming across greatly, George. I do love it. However, now you've given me a slight in, I will move us on a little bit because we are racing towards what Lisa would tell me is getting far too long.
Guys,
the podcast.
Actually, look, I mean, just to make this incredibly real, I'm sitting here in the service park in my car. I've had to put the window up. It's rather hot. Because there was noise outside. I am on forklift driving duties and I'm going to have to go in 3 or 4 minutes. So let's move through your questions. I'll start answering questions and stop pontificating. We'll fare through it.
Okay, so just a quick mention of Adrian Formo and Gus Greensmith in that case. Obviously, the other two drivers in the M Sport fold. Another non-finish for Formo, but this one felt perhaps less on him than others have this season. Greensmith, it was his first, I think it was actually his first crash since the end of 2020. So he's had quite a good run there for somebody who had a bit of a reputation for accidents before. But the pair of them, what can you make of the George? Obviously, we saw him repairing the cars on Saturday. That was, for all intents and purposes, that was essentially a punishment for Malcolm Wilson, wasn't it? But it's not unlike him to do that to his drivers and to sort of show them the value of what making a mistake means to everybody else in the team. But what can you make of Greensmith and Formo at the weekend?
I'll tell you what. I spoke to them both beforehand and they were both filled with targets and it sounded like, you know, they had a good humility filled approach to the event. I think I didn't get much of a chance to speak to Gus throughout the event. Obviously he slipped out the running on the Saturday as did Adrian, but Adrian actually really, really impressed me here. And I might not even be able to put my finger on it, but he really had a positive approach to the rally. He understood the challenges and he was really, really wanting to leverage them. I think he admitted to driving a little bit too long and a puncture at one point, which of course Gus did massively on day one. But the diff failure for Adrian on Saturday, that cannot be put on him at all. I don't believe it can. Did he break the suspension somewhere? I can't remember. Yes, I saw him fixing suspension somewhere.
Yeah, I think that was after he had his puncture, and then it went. Yeah, that's right. Saturday morning. Yeah,
I filmed that. Actually, we've got the footage of him doing that, and he was working very, very hard, and was really struggling. He actually managed to get the nut off the top of one of the rear control links, and the bolt unfortunately wouldn't come out. And he really made an incredibly diligent event. We've actually got that entire thing. I think I filmed the whole dash thing, about 8 minutes of it. At least I certainly did it on and off. If I didn't do it as one hit, I don't know whether we can actually get that up. It would be moderately boring. But honestly, you would see, I'm sure our editor Elliot or Colin could edit that together. I mean, the effort he made, the diligence. And again, I just stood back. I didn't say a single word during the whole affair. You know, I gave them lots of space. I tried to be out of their line of sight at all times. Even I was making sure my shadow wasn't over them, because they don't need that distraction. The only thing I did that was audible to them at any point was I made sure a few people stood back out of the way, and then the marshals came and did that job for us. So he really impressed me by his approach. Gus just seemed to have a terrible event, poor guy. I think certainly speaking to him at the start of the event, I thought his approach was going to be spot on. And again, he should have been able to leverage it. I didn't manage to speak to him to understand why he rolled. Did you see any interviews with him about that?
It just sounded quite unlucky, I think. He kind of came around a slow right-hander, and he just got a little bit stuck in the ruts, because he said he'd had a caution on it for the ruts in the notes, and it just went over.
Almost too slow. I understand that. I understand that now. Being out here doing this, I didn't get a chance to look at WRC.com more than twice during the whole rally, and that was only for a few minutes. So I've actually had to ask you guys to be texting me the results to know where we are, and to text me what's happened in a stage. I'm sitting at the end of a stage, unable to know what's going on. So we've been backwards and forwardsing it all, so I could catch all the action. So sorry if I sound to everyone that, does George not know what happened to these guys? Well, actually, I'm going to have to catch up over the next few days and find out what happened in this rally. I'm going to review. Here's superfan status. I'm going to review every single stage on WRC.com. But actually, I probably don't need to do that. If I just watch all our Dirtfish videos, I should get all the stories, because I believe we've covered everything.
I'd like to say so as well, George. That's probably the perfect plug and the perfect way to end this. Thank you very much from all of us here. First of all, I'm sure it wasn't a challenge for you, but accepting the challenge to go and cover the rally for us on the ground, and for your time on Spin the Rally Pod. It's been a pleasure as always, George.
Look, and I'll echo what I said before. When we decided we were going to do Goodwood as well, when that opportunity came up, I actually pushed for you to join me here. But they wouldn't send you. So
a public outcry. I tell you, we need to get our travel funding page sorted. We teased it before for American rallies, but take us anywhere. If anybody wants to get any travel companies listening, want to get behind it, George and Luke go on adventures. We'll find out.
Yeah,
anything like that. But
we can run a bus with folks in the back. Their tour, George and Luke's tours. Actually, George and Colin's tours. My God, that would be terrifying for people to be in a car with Colin. He's actually unbelievably scary. He's such a bully. Lovely dude.
Well, there we are. A nice bully. But George, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for listening to Spin the Rally Pod as well. Make sure you are subscribed on your chosen podcast provider, Apple Podcasts or Spotify. There's a new episode every Tuesday. We'll join you probably with a more full team this time next week.
Thank you for that, Luke. I've got one more thing I must say, and apologies for nearly forgetting to mention Carl, whom I spoke to at the start-finish area of the Osirian stage. He helped me with my morning broadcast. An absolutely lovely super fan as well. Carl, thank you for your help. He was very concerned after we did it that he'd fluffed his lines. And I noticed that Elliot made a very nice cut, so that your input was brief, but it was perfect. And you weren't made to look stupid, Carl. Thank you very much. Please remain a fan of our services.